This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I just got finished up at work, ran by to see how my mom was doing. She's sleeping, which is okay. We had our meeting today, kind of the quarterly report type of meeting with the nursing staff, and I brought my dad and we went down to talk and to listen, and it's just a chance for us to say whatever we'd like to say and for them to kind of give us an update. And things are pretty much where we expect them to be. Mom is not eating that much, very little in fact, only drinking a little bit during the day. She's sleeping a lot, and you know, things are progressing. She's getting to the point where it's more difficult for her to swallow pills, so they are increasing her comfort medicine, because that's liquid form. So, you know, step at a time. I expressed again to them our appreciation for everything they're doing for her, and, you know, the difficult job that they have, that they are doing well, and for the kindness that they've shown her. So it's a process. We're moving through this process. Everything's puttering along at work. I did a bunch of updates on our first paperless project. Got that deployed this week. As it turns out, I just found out that all of our beta testers are at a retreat starting tomorrow. And they will be at that retreat all week next week. So we haven't had much new stuff coming in. With the changes to the forms. So this may get interesting. Because today is the 13th. They will not be back till, well, the retreat runs through the 23rd, which is Sunday night. We were planning on harvesting on the 24th. I don't think we're going to get there because we would still have to process everything that was coming in. So we may have to delay our harvest and let them get their stuff submitted. Yeah, so this is going to be interesting because when they submit stuff to us, often we have to send it back to them and say, wait, you know, we need this. So, yeah. But, you know, the system is set up such that we can harvest at any time we want to. Plus, the system does allow us more flexibility. So we could theoretically wait until later. I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see how it all works out. Worst case scenario, our associates don't get reimbursed this month, they get reimbursed next month, but You know. Worse things have happened. So it's going to be fascinating to see how this all works out. Because I think everything's working, but of course, until someone actually tries to do real work with it, you just never know. But anyways, so moving forward there. Back in my sprint. This is the first week of my second sprint. And I've been going along pretty good. I kind of bottomed out in energy Wednesday night, last night. But I think I'm still ahead of where I'm supposed to be. And I got an emergency call to come run sound at church tonight. So, because their other sound man had to actually go into work tonight. Well, one of their other sound men, so... So that was a little unexpected, but I think I'm still far enough that if I can just get some work done tonight, that we'll be okay. We'll be all right. And I'm in a fairly easy section right now. So we'll, you know, we'll see. Over the next 2 days, and excuse me, over the next 2 days, I need to put down about 4,000 words, but that's all doable. Step at a time. I had talked about epigenetics a couple of years ago, really fascinating stuff, with that there is this whole new layer of operation and information in how our DNA works. And I had done at least one podcast about that. Plus, I had done a podcast on how DNA is actually organized in the human cells. Fascinating stuff. Well, I came across an additional chat about all this. It was one of those whiteboard chats where they draw it on a whiteboard as they're talking. And as I was watching this chat, the thought came to mind, okay, now you're just messing with us. So, because these control methods are amazing. They're just spectacular. So just by way of review, you've got the DNA. And it's a double helix, so it's got ladder railings on each side. And the ladder rungs themselves are just made up of 4 amino acids. Oh, they said in the talk what those amino acids are, and I'm sure I will mispronounce them. But they are adenine, thymine, guanine, and cytosine. Also affectionately known as AGTC. And so C always pairs with G, and T always pairs with A. And of these pairings, there's 3 billion, I think, in a single strand of DNA, and every single one of your cells has 2 copies of this DNA. So, of course, there has to be some way for this all to get stored. Well, there are these molecules called histone molecules that the DNA is actually wrapped around. And so there was one study that had been done about how it's wrapped around, and it's wrapped around in this very efficient fractal pattern that allows access to certain portions of the DNA, because you have to have access to those portions because there is a little molecular machine called RNA polymerase, and it splits apart the DNA and transcribes it so that it makes a little strip of RNA. This RNA floats out into the cell. There are protein building molecular machines out in the cell that then pick this up and transcribe it, turn it into a protein. And then the protein magically, beautifully folds into the right shape. And ta-da-ta-da, you have just one of the many, many proteins that you need to keep you alive. So it's a pretty fascinating process. Now then, what's even more interesting, though, is not only does this transcription and translation process occur, but there are also additional processes that can control when genes are expressed into these proteins. And it's important that you get the right ones expressed at the right time, as you can imagine. And given that there are 3 billion base pairs, you can imagine there's a whole lot of transcription that can occur. And you want just the ones that you need to be transcribed at the right time. Now then, one scientist got a complete map of the human genome. Was that the 90s or the 80s? Can't remember. Everybody was patting themselves on the back and saying, great, we've got it. And it wasn't too long after that when they realized that, yeah, that is the whole map. But there are other mechanisms that are going on to control the expression and the translation and the transcription of these things. And these methods sit on top of the genetic material. Hence, they are called epigenetic. Epigenetics, this process. And a lot of them are really, really, really important. You can't live without these things. For instance, there is a tumor suppressor gene called P53. It creates a protein that makes sure that cells divide at a steady rate. So you've got carcinogens like tobacco smoke that can physically change the nucleotide sequence on the DNA so that the protein doesn't do its job. That can lead to cancer. But now epigenetics is also showing us that we can get the same cancer without any mutations or changing of the DNA. Instead, the gene can be turned off and will not be expressed. So not only now do you have this magnificent blueprint of 3 billion base pairs, which, by the way, there was an article just today about the fact that DNA now has been used to store a moving GIF of a horse. And that, in fact, DNA is an incredible substance for information storage. You just can store gobs and gobs of information in DNA. Isn't that convenient? So the thing about it is it's not just amazing for storing information. Now there's this whole other subsystem that can control the release of that information. And so far they know there are 3 main mechanisms in epigenetic that can control the expression of the DNA code without changing the DNA. I will probably mispronounce these, but here we go. Those 3 methods are methylation, histone acetylation, and non-coding RNA. So with methylation, what you have is there are these enzymes that add a tiny little molecule called a methyl group to the DNA. They just attach it to the DNA. When that happens, then that gene cannot be expressed. It's just like an on and off switch. And that happens more frequently at certain places, like the guanine nucleotides. So, and they're called CPG islands. I don't know if that's what they're called, but something like that. Anyways, so when the RNA polymerase works its way down the DNA strand, it gets blocked by one of these and it stops because it can't reproduce it. Okay, so that's methylation. There are also enzyme demethylase, which can come along and take those off. And they respond by changes in environment. Types of stress the cells are under, you know, types of nutrients that are available to the cells, etc., etc., etc. That's the first method. Second method is called histone acetylation. Remember I said that the DNA is wrapped around what's called a histone molecule. Well, as it turns out, these histone molecules, I'm getting my mail, one moment, actually have little extensions on them that are called entails. And when certain other molecules attach to these entails, they can make them tighten up or they can make them loosen up, which means that as that histone tightens up or loosens up, you actually expose other strands of DNA to transcription. Whereas methylation constitutes an on and off switch, this histone acetylation is more like a variable control. So you can like turn the knob and turn up and down how much this gene is expressed, how many proteins are actually made. I'm backing into my garage, one moment. In addition to all that, there is another mechanism called non-coding RNA. And let me go see what that one does. Non-coding RNA is a strand of RNA that is transcribed by the RNA polymerase but doesn't get translated. She mentioned on this talk there was a whole bunch of them. Oh, by the way, the name of the talk was Epigenetics, Methylation, Acetylation, and ncRNA. And it was by T. Sithu. Anyways, there's non-coding as well, and there's microRNA and interfering RNA that bind to the strand that's created by the RNA polymerase, and even though everything works up to that point, these can attach on at that point, and then it doesn't get expressed. And so it just gets silenced. And I'm going to have to go because I've got to get back into church. You know, you look at all of this stuff, and one of the other things that is coming out now that was surprising to them is that they used to think that when the sperm and the egg cells were reprogrammed during formation, that all of the epigenetic tags were removed. So you couldn't pass the effects of environment onto the next generation. And now they're discovering, no, that's not quite right. And in the article, she says, or in the talk, she says, but scientists have found that sometimes the reprogramming fails, causing some of these tags to be passed on. And I would submit to you here that that isn't necessarily a failure, that it might be doing exactly what it was designed to do. So one of the things that proves this is there is this Ajuti mouse, and the Ajuti mouse has a gene that makes the mouse fat and yellow. All mice have it, but if it's methylated, the gene can't be expressed. However, when these Ajuti mouse give birth to other mice, there is a possibility that that gene won't be methylated, and scientists can actually control it with diet. So they can take an Ajuti mouse, which is yellow and fat, and they can feed it nutrients while it is pregnant, and with those specific nutrients, they can actually shut off that gene in the babies. And the baby just ends up thin and brown, just like a normal little mouse. But they can also feed the mother nutrients while the mother is pregnant, and they can turn those genes on so when the pups are born, they all have it. And what this is showing is, in fact, that those genes or those methylations do get passed on. If you're hearing buzzing, this is my dad calling me. I'll be right back. Okay, so the upshot of all this for me is this. For a long time, we've had this ongoing conflict, in quotes, between science and God and evolutionism and theism and blah, 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 blah. And I've mentioned a couple of times on this podcast that for me, whenever I hear evolution, I just replace that with design for adaptation. Well, we see things, you know, change over time because they're evolving. And I say, well, we see things change over time because it's designed for adaptation. And what I see in all of this epigenetic stuff is these exquisite, cool, unbelievably advanced mechanisms that can allow not only an organism to adapt to its environment for itself, but also then pass along those adaptations to its children, to its progeny. All this, I will just mention here before I toddle on my merry way, should give us some pause. And the reason is that, yes, there is accuracy in the statement when God says, I am God and I visit the transgressions of the parent to the children, to the third and fourth generations. One of the things that bookended this whole talk was she asked, what if I told you that the decision your grandmother made decades ago could be affecting you today? And in fact, there has been some studies that appear to show where there is feast and famine situations in certain areas of a country that you can go down and see characteristics that if young children, when they're passing through puberty, are in a feast and famine situation, if they have abundance or they don't lack abundance, that can actually affect not only their children, but their children's children in terms of their metabolism and some of those things. So, you know, if you're young and you haven't necessarily gotten married yet, you're going to have children, blah, 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 blah. Take care of yourself. Just the takeaway from all of this is take care of yourself. And certainly, when you are pregnant, take care of yourself. Because there's a whole lot more going on here in terms of the environment that that child is growing in than we have ever imagined. And it's a beautiful thing, and it's a wondrous thing, and it's a God thing, and it would be good if we took advantage of it. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.